Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I give live remarks about why young people should vote for Donald Trump, the comprehensive case of why our generation should vote for Donald Trump. If this podcast has touched you in any way whatsoever, please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support is your place to support our program. If you feel that this program needs to be in front of more people, then charliekirk.com/support is the place to help make that possible. If you want to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, you know what to do. Make sure you're subscribed. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Hit subscribe and give us a 5-star review. Screenshot it and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com. Gen Z for Trump, millennials for Trump. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I want to talk about internet freedom. Social media companies get to decide what content is suitable for the sensitive snowflakes among us and censor whatever they don't like. Shouldn't you be the one to decide what you want to read or watch, not them? Well, there's one thing you can control, their access to your data. And for that, I use ExpressVPN. You see, the problem with big tech companies is that they not only censor what you read, but they track what you do online. They track what you're searching for, the videos you watch, and everything you click. They use this data to serve you ads and can match your activity to your offline identity using your device's unique IP address. When I use ExpressVPN, these tech companies can't see my IP address at all. My identity is masked and anonymized by a secure VPN server. Plus, ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your data to protect you from hackers and internet bad guys. So right now, go to expressvpn.com/Charlie. 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 And why would you give these tech companies a free license to know everything about you? So go to ExpressVPN.com/Charlie today.
It's incredible to see all the young people here tonight. And so thank you. And there will be an opportunity to be able to just talk about what the president stands for and why he deserves 4 more years and the agenda that this administration has been able to successfully deliver for our generation. And it's a very interesting moment in our country. I mean, 2020 has definitely been a year that none of us would have expected. It started with us wondering if we were going to go to war with Iran. Remember that in early January, an impeachment fight. Epidemiological Pearl Harbor from China, shut down the entire country, 30 million people out of work, race riots, corporate America embracing BLM Incorporated, critical race theory happening in all of your schools, many of your schools still being closed. And then just when we thought it couldn't get any more chaotic, Supreme Court seat fills up, and then the President of the United States hospitalized by the very same virus that shut down our country. And 2020 is not even over yet, because if we do our job, we'll be celebrating 4 more years, 4 weeks from tonight. And so I want to talk about something very interesting that a lot of, I think the activist media has definitely missed it. But for all the students out there, I think you'll find this somewhat insightful, which is how the parties have really changed. And so I don't mean the switch, the great switch that the Republicans and Democrats switched in the 1960s, which is a complete lie. No, I mean just actually recently about how the Republican Party has actually embraced 3 core ideas that the Democrats used to call their own. And this is all thanks to President Trump. President Trump has changed the Republican Party for the better for 3 major issues that directly impact our generation. The first of which is, in a very bizarre way, we as conservatives and we as Trump supporters, we are now the ones defending freedom of speech. Like 10 years ago, liberals used to say, no, we're the ones that want you to be able to agree to disagree. We want to be able to say the provocative things. And now a decade later, it is conservatives that say, can we just please wear a hat that supports the president without being kicked out of a class, without being graded differently by our professor, without being ridiculed by our friends and family? And so The American left and liberals have completely betrayed the terrain of the First Amendment. They almost consider this to be an inconvenience. They don't believe in dialogue, debate, or discussion. And conservatives have always been for freedom of speech. It's not as if we haven't ever contested for that. But in a very interesting opening now, President Donald Trump has done more to try to protect First Amendment rights of students on college campuses, by the way, signing an executive order protecting freedom of speech on college campuses across the country. First president to do that. But also talking about how censorship of anyone you disagree with is wrong. 71% of young people believe that if they express their political or their religious opinions, they believe that they will lose their job, lose their friends, or lose their social status. And one of the reasons why the events that we do are so well attended is this might be one of the first, if only, opportunities you have this entire election cycle to wear that Make America Great Again hat or wear that Trump hat without coming under physical danger. Now, Utah might be a little bit different, but I'm hearing stories from Utah that there's plenty of liberals here in the state of Utah. In fact, you have one as a Republican senator. And so, more on that later. Sorry, if you vote to impeach our president as a Republican, I got a problem with you. Okay, let me just make that perfectly clear. After you go and beg the president for his endorsement, after you go ask him to serve as Secretary of State, the decent thing to do would not have an embargoed op-ed with the Washington Post that publishes the day you get sworn in as U.S. Senator saying that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. He didn't want the Utah voters to know that when he was running for the Senate. In fact, he kind of swerved in and out and was like, oh, I think I can work with the president on certain things. But the moment that he gets elected, he then shows his true colors to all of you. And that is that, you know what we call that? We call that dishonesty. That's what we call that. And so anyway, there's plenty of liberals in this state. And when we talk about freedom of speech, we talk about the need to hear other people's opinions and ideas. We really mean it. And, you know, conservatives on college campuses, if you're in any sort of typical university, you have to hear the leftist pablum all the time. You have to hear that America is systemically racist and awful and all these things that are completely and categorically untrue. And we'll unpack those tonight. You have to hear that Donald Trump is an awful president, all these sorts of things. And then all you want is, I don't know, an hour to bring a conservative speaker on campus, optional, without having to have anyone attend, you know, mandatory. And for that reason, now a recent college poll came out that 1/5 of college students believe it is okay to use violence, college liberals, against people they disagree with. And this is a really important point because I believe the number one issue in our country right now is the freedom of speech issue. I think all these other issues kind of connect back to that. Because if you're not able to tell somebody what you think, if you're not able to work out your ideas, which might be really bad ideas, by the way, they might be, and that's fine. That's why we are talking beings. That's why Aristotle called us speaking beings. If you're not able to talk, then you're either going to shut yourself up, self-censorship, which is the number one form of censorship in our country, or eventually that will lead to violence, that will lead to force, because then all of a sudden you don't understand the nuance in another person's position. And the left does not think that Trump supporters are wrong. They don't. They think we're bad. And that's a very fundamental difference. They just don't think we're wrong on policy. They think we're bad people. They think that that hat and Make America Great Again, which is really a slogan about American renewal and American revival and that tomorrow can be better than today and rebuilding the American middle class and ending the endless wars and challenging the DC cartel, a very optimistic, positive message, that they falsely imply something that it isn't. They say, well, this is just about dividing America based on skin color. I'm sorry, which party exactly cares about skin color right now, the Democrats or Republicans? It's the Democrats. Of course they do. They're the ones that are perfectly okay with black-only dormitories. They're the ones that have the black-only caucus in the U.S. Congress. They're the ones that embrace an entire movement that is about organizing people based on their skin color, not on their character. And so this idea of freedom of speech is very important. It's not insignificant. And interestingly, the entire left has decided that they no longer want to contest for this. And so President Trump kind of just, he comes down the escalator and he says, I'm the ultimate freedom of speech candidate. I'm going to say stuff and we're going to see if you really believe in freedom of speech, liberals. All of you guys that with ACLU and you've sued everyone under the sun, we're going to see if you actually believe this. So he comes down and he does something that a politician is absolutely not supposed to do. He starts to tell the truth. He starts to say most people in Washington, D.C. are absolutely awful. Then he goes on to say our immigration policies are backwards. China is lying to us and stealing from us. The middle class is shrinking. I'm sick of losing. Elect me and it might change. DC political class found great exception with that, because as soon as he started to do that, he started to run differently than any other person for office. It wasn't like Republican good, Democrat bad. He said this system of the last 35, 40 years, where the richest counties in our country around Washington, D.C., where the proximity to the power source or the funding source is directly related with your income level, there's something wrong with that. So just so you guys all know, 8 out of 10 of the wealthiest counties in our country around Washington, D.C., 8 out of 10. What does Washington, D.C. produce that is meaningful for you? Nothing. Taxes, regulations, rules, insider deals, lobbyists, foreign wars where your friends go overseas and die for some sort of undeclared objective. That's what Washington, D.C. produces. Debt, deficits, endless spending. Meanwhile, the richest counties in America used to be Chicago, Detroit, and Philadelphia. So President Trump rightly called this out at his announcement speech. And one of the reasons why the left really, and some people on the right, and we've already mentioned one of those people, hate him so much is that he challenges almost every bad decision that they've made over the last couple decades, whether it be the trade deals, whether it be our immigration policies, which is just so silly to continue to bring in 1 million people into our country every single year and keep our borders wide open for whomever wants to walk through them. And one candidate calls that out and the entire ruling class goes into a frenzy. They say, you're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to say it. And then he did something that you're really not supposed to do. He challenged all of them, called them names, defeated the Bush dynasty, the Clinton dynasty, the media dynasty, the tech dynasty, and he won 4 years ago in a way that no one thought was possible. Because decent middle-income people for 30, 40 years said, I have been waiting for an opportunity to send a blazing middle finger to the ruling class. And because I don't like the way that the trade deals are being negotiated. I don't like the way that the current trajectory of the country is going. And he rose up and Donald Trump did that. And then he did something he really wasn't supposed to do, which resulted in them spying the coup, Mueller, and impeachment, is he actually did what he said he was going to do. And that is the absolute mortal sin, right? So you're supposed to do what Mitt Romney does. You tell you guys one thing, and then he goes to D.C. and does the exact opposite, right? So he's like, I'm a strong conservative. Let's go impeach a conservative. Like, that's what D.C. politicians do. Donald Trump was like, no, I'm actually going to do what I said I'm going to do. In fact, I'm wearing a shirt today of the Justice League, which is Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and soon to be Amy Coney Barrett. Praise God. And President Donald Trump does this very irregular thing where he actually compares what he said he was going to do then with his actions, right? And so most politicians in the D.C. political elite, their only self-interest is to serve their donor class or to serve the people that put them in office. And that's the second thing I want to talk about that President Donald Trump has disrupted for the better in this country and impacts every single one of you. And if there's any liberals out there tonight, first of all, thank you for coming. We really appreciate that. I'd love to hear from you if you like Trump or not. I'm actually really interested. But there's one thing that really Joe Biden and his entire party have to give Donald Trump credit for. He's ending the endless wars. I was born in 1993. But one of my earliest childhood memories was 9/11, September 11th, 2001. And actually seeing our country perpetually at war without a declared defined objective, what victory looks like, perpetually occupying Afghanistan. We never should have invaded Iraq. And now Donald Trump is bringing peace to the Middle East between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. He's ending the endless wars in Afghanistan. He's ending these perpetual occupations overseas, which every young person should applaud completely. And he's not afraid to use, force where necessary, killing Soleimani, killing al-Baghdadi. He's not afraid to do that. But he also thinks, why should we continually be a nation-building exercise to countries that don't share our values when children in inner cities can't read, we can't build bridges anymore, we can't build roads, middle class incomes are going down? How about some prioritization here? We're $26 trillion in debt, and we're going to keep on trying to rebuild the Kandahar Valley. So this is a very interesting thing where Joe Biden and the Democrat Party has now fallen backwards into being the anti-free speech, endless war party. And they should be challenged for that. Because when I was 10 years ago, when I was just getting my start in politics, all the liberals were like the anti-war people. And I kind of agreed with them. I was like, you know what? You're right. We shouldn't be overseas endlessly, perpetually, while our own country is suffering. And Donald Trump looked at things not through a right versus left lens instead of a right versus wrong lens. And he said, this is just screwed up. And some of you here might like his style. Some of you here might not like his style. But you can't argue with the results. You get Israel and the United Arab Emirates to a peace deal. And any president does that. That first of all, that's worthy of a Nobel Peace Prize. Secondly, it is beyond noticeable that something he is doing is different. That something he is doing is actually delivering results for all of you. So some of you here still might be liberals or Democrats watching on the live stream. How many wars did Obama end? Yeah, good question. Exactly. In fact, he started more wars. President Donald Trump is the only president in my lifetime not to send our generation overseas to another endless war with no declared objective. Only president.
I want to talk to you guys about Good Ranchers. You've heard me talk about them before. Their meat is terrific. They get delivered to you for free if you order at GoodRanchers.com. Good Ranchers began with the standard of bringing top quality 100% American-born, raised, and harvested meat to families across America. This vision was instilled into them from their grandparents that owned community grocery stores and believed in trust, charity, and family values. GoodRanchers.com partners directly with only American ranches from across the United States to bring the highest quality meat straight to your door. Don't waste your money on cheap cuts or overseas beef. Buy American at GoodRanchers.com. Skip the grocery line. It's 100% American beef, chicken, and more. Support Americans farmers and support the American economy. GoodRanchers.com delivers your favorite meals right to your front door. Perfect for grilling out or dinners at home. Go to GoodRanchers.com to view all their American beef and chicken packages. Use the promo code Charlie to save $20 off your purchase. That's GoodRanchers.com. That's GoodRanchers.com, promo code Charlie, and save $20 for a limited time only. GoodRanchers.com, promo code Charlie. GoodRanchers.com, promo code Charlie.
And the third thing that has really kind of changed the landscape of American politics, and this is a really interesting learning moment for conservatives. I want to be very clear. I love free enterprise. I love private property, and I love entrepreneurship. However, I don't idolize or deify corporations, and we shouldn't. We as conservatives, first and foremost, we should always get our priorities straight, right? Church is far more essential than a corporation. It just is. Secondly, and this has been a really interesting learning moment for a lot of conservatives, and I think the last couple of years has really demonstrated this, which is that a couple small set of companies in our country are not just monopolizing, they're dominating the entire landscape of what you buy, how you buy it, what you think, and how you think it. So for example, Google. It is unhealthy the amount of power that Google has. By the way, as we're live streaming this on YouTube, so this could be just taken down by mistake at any time, because guess why? We gave power to some 21-year-old spoiled brat that went to Caltech, and he has the power now because he sits in a Google office in Silicon Valley to make sure that 10,000 people don't hear this. That's not right. He shouldn't have that kind of power. Do we agree? So we see you, person. But not only that, if a corporation, and by the way, I love job creation, I love markets, I think it's great. But I also think we should be unafraid to challenge certain companies and corporations when they stop acting in our country's best interest. When you fund BLM Incorporated with $400 million, PepsiCo, I don't want to buy your products anymore. Nike, Adidas, Bank of America, when you are funding certain organizations that are completely contrary to our worldview, our system, that should be a question mark of, is that really good? Is that a good thing for our country? And so the Democrats, in a very bizarre way, the Democrats were always the anti-corporate party, always. And I'm not exactly saying if we're anti-corporate, I'm not that far, but I'm a corporate skeptic in certain ways, especially a corporate skeptic of the Dow 30. If your entire business model is to not charge when you use the product, you guys are the product, not the users. Only illegal drugs and social media calls the people that use their stuff users, because it's addictive and they're selling you and they're selling your data. This is nothing more than surveillance capitalism. A lot of you have seen the documentary Social Dilemma, talks about it very well. And yet, why is it that we're rewarding these companies that silence conservative speech? They manipulate algorithms to benefit a very specific worldview. They directly fund a very radical agenda. And then we're just supposed to say, oh, it's just the free market. In fact, it is government regulation, Section 230, that created the power that these companies have. And so I think that we as conservatives should be unafraid to challenge the amount of corporate power that some of these companies have. And I don't know what that looks like. Some people say break them up. Some people say this. I know this. It is not healthy for anybody in this room that if your net worth has not gone up substantially in the last 6 months and Jeff Bezos is $65 billion richer, there's something not right about that. And now I'm not a Bernie Sanders person, like, oh, break it up. They should confiscate it. I say, instead, we shut down and locked down the country, which never should have happened, by the way. The lockdowns will go down as one of the worst mistakes in American history. And by the way, I apologize. They're taking out people in the back of the room. I thought this was Utah. I thought you guys enjoyed liberty here. No, seriously. I have gone, and I don't know if it's the mayor. I don't know who's in charge of the city government around here, but they got to be voted out of office because I have been to blue states that allow bigger gatherings than this. It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. And so, who did the lockdowns benefit? Well, it didn't benefit your friends that committed suicide, that's for sure. It didn't benefit the businesses that went under, 100,000 small businesses that collapsed. It didn't benefit any of you, God forbid, or any of your friends that are now chemically addicted to alcohol that weren't before the shutdowns, or substance abuse, social isolation, relationships disintegrated, so, you know, societal, spousal abuse and also domestic abuse. That's not who it benefited. No, it's the billionaire class that actually benefited from the lockdowns. If I was Jeff Bezos, I would want another lockdown. 100%. Why? How many people ordered more products than not from Amazon during the lockdown? I did. Very few options to get products in 6 hours or less, right? And people say, well, he invested in it. He did such a great job. That's fine. Okay. Congratulations. You also own the Washington Post. You pay 0% in corporate income tax. And they say, oh, Donald Trump pays $750 in corporate income tax. I'm sorry. Jeff Bezos and his company pays 0% in corporate income tax. And somehow there's mysterious silence and the radical left talks about it, but Joe Biden is perfectly okay with it. And that should tell you something. That Joe Biden, for all of his blustering, he's the billionaire class candidate. Joe Biden represents Amazon. He represents Google. He represents the very same companies that, quite honestly, if they were given the power, which they're very close to getting, they would shut every single one of you up. They will price gouge you into oblivion. And it will turn into some sort of very depressing corporate tyranny. And call me an old school conservative. I actually think family formation, living quiet and peaceful lives, and being able to go to church is far more important than getting a package in 6 hours or less than Amazon. And understand, a lot of these companies, they don't believe in markets. A huge part of markets is competition. These corporations, not only do they fund radical movements that we don't appreciate that align with our value system, but also their goal is to not have a market. Their goal is to be monopolistic. And that's the goal of any company. It should be. You want to dominate the market. But it's also our goal to make sure that the next 1,000 entrepreneurs can compete against Amazon, can compete against Google. And so Joe Biden, for all of his, you know, for all of the inputs that get into put into his brain every single morning alongside an adrenaline shot and a carefully crafted schedule of two appearances at once. And by the way, congratulations, you're bigger than any Joe Biden rally that has ever happened in the history of the planet. Despite all of that, Joe Biden is the defender of the billionaire class. And I can already hear, well, Charlie, Donald Trump's a billionaire. You're right. And that's what makes him so dangerous to them, is he used to be part of them. He understands the contempt that they have for this country. And if these people get back into power, their agenda is very simple. They look at America as an economy that happens to have a country around it. We look at this country as a country that happens to have an economy in it. Big difference. Where we put the country above just GDP growth. That's fine. I think it's cool. Okay, great. But also our middle class wages rising. Are kids committing suicide at higher rates? Is it easier to have many children in our country? Are you able to go to church without the threat of being arrested? Those things are actually kind of more important sometimes than macroeconomic GDP growth. But again, it's fine. Like, I'm not saying it's unimportant. But I also think it's very short-sighted. It's not comprehensive. So what's going on with our generation? Have these lockdowns helped us? 52% of people our age are now living at home with their parents. I don't mean that as an attack if anyone's here and you fall in that category. I don't. I mean, sometimes it's impossible. It's too expensive. You can't find jobs. They shut down the country. So I actually have more sympathy for that than ever before. One out of four of young people have contemplated committing suicide, according to the Center for Disease Control, in the last 90 days. Drug usage, alcohol use, everything is up. So are we leaving a better country for our generation? The answer is, of course not. And who's the one that's actually trying to reopen the economy? Donald Trump. When Joe Biden says, I might shut it down because the experts tell me, what if the experts are trying to get the next board seat at Amazon? Because if we shut down the country, Amazon will gain more power. It's that simple. And it's not just about Amazon. It's also about Google. It's about every one of the companies that chemically addicts you to their product. And whether you know it or not, Instagram, and yes, TikTok and YouTube, they build algorithms so that you are addicted to those products. Oh, it's for free. They're selling you, as I mentioned, to other people. So this is where Donald Trump completely changed the landscape. And this is a very, very good thing. It's unbelievably good because Mitt Romney represents the corporate Republicans, where all business, no matter what, is always good. And again, I'm a Milton Friedman guy. Like, I love markets. I think it's good. But I also think it should be kind of like a suggestion, not a dogmatic religious text, right? Saying, okay, I love entrepreneurship. I think people's lives get better when you trade things. I also think when you concentrate too much power in one person's hands, whether it be at the Internal Revenue Service or in some company in Silicon Valley, that's a bad thing. And all of a sudden they say, that's heretical. You can't say that. Free market at all costs. And I say, wait a second. How exactly is it a free market when you have four companies with a combined value of $6 trillion that pay almost nothing in corporate income tax, and our generation is unemployed, sitting at home, addicted to drugs, and we're pushing marijuana on them as the end-all, be-all solution. Like, let's all go, you know, so you don't start a revolution against us. Like, no, I actually want a country where we have 1,000 companies that have to combine to the value of Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, and Google. Like, that's a free market. That's an entrepreneurial sector that I can believe in. And so Mitt Romney believes, and I'm just using it as a caricature. It's also kind of fun because we're in Utah. And I know it will make headlines. So, but Mitt Romney, he really is a corporate Republican. And you saw it when he ran for president. When he ran for president at his convention, he said, yes, we did build this, Mr. President. Remember that? He put that because Barack Obama said, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. Stupid thing for Obama to say, right? But then equally as dumb thing for Mitt Romney to say. You know why? Because most people in this country are not business owners. A lot of people are business workers. And for them, they want to just start a family. They want to have 5 kids. They want to have 7 kids. They want to homeschool their kids. They want to have a good relationship with their church. And so they see this kind of corporate lingo being pushed by Mitt Romney, and they say, huh, you remind me of the guy that showed up on October 17th, 1996. I remember it was a Thursday. You pulled up in your chauffeured cars with security after you landed in your private jet, and you told us that our manufacturing plant is being closed, and you left 20 minutes later without learning our names. I hate you. That's who the middle America, that's why they rejected him. Donald Trump comes on the scene and says, I know what's happened to these communities in Akron, in Kentucky, in North Carolina. And he said, maybe it's not a good thing that we keep on just sending every piece of manufacturing over to Wuhan. Maybe we should make penicillin in our country. Maybe we should make vitamin C. And for that, all of a sudden, he challenges the capital flows of the corporate class. And so for all of you out there, I hope you understand that there's a seismic change happening in front of your eyes right now, where all of a sudden you see those of us that actually want the country to prosper, right? Freedom of speech, ending these endless wars, getting our immigration policies under control, being able to own a firearm without being taken away from some gun grabber, Kamala Harris, which all of these things, where the other side, all of a sudden Joe Biden is now kind of the crusader for the corporate class. We need to talk about this more. Because young people should not continually reward a political party that now represents the needs, wants, and interests of the very few and the elites. And so, as I mentioned, our generation right now is in complete and total crisis. And we see this playing out in the streets of our country. And BLM Incorporated is only the latest manifestation of this, right? BLM Incorporated is, of course, a terrorist movement, should be recognized as a domestic terror organization. It's based in critical race theory. Almost everything they say is a lie. The statement is kind of a sensory overload. It's semantic overload because, of course, it's true. But it's also a pseudo-Marxist organization that wants to categorize people based on the color of their skin, wants to disrupt and destroy the Western prescribed nuclear family, abolish the police, abolish prisons, legalize sex work. And that's just their opening shot. That's what they're tell us what they want us to do. Meanwhile, the founders say that we're trained Marxists. But the reason why it's caught on with fire, where you see, I'm sure you see a lot of people here in Utah, they have the Black Lives Matter stickers. Like, I'm such a good person. Look at me. Hey, excuse me. I'm a good person because I have the BLM. You see that? Good person. Thank you. I'm a good person. That's what that is, right? It's the good person bumper sticker. And when they post the black square, because they must too, it's like, dear world, I'm a better person than you are, right? Like, okay, I got it. Congratulations. And by the way, that's exactly why I didn't post the black square. And proudly, And if you did, I'm not trying to condemn you personally. However, I hope you did it for the right reasons. I hope you didn't do it for virtue signaling. I hope you did it because you're actually worried about innocent people being exploited in our country. And if you are, then terrific. Then we can start to talk about the slaughter of the black community and Planned Parenthood and black on black crime in this country, because that's the real driving root cause of what's happening. But no, what's really driving this is that our generation is losing faith in the American system. And you guys aren't. That's why you're here tonight. But I'm talking generally, is that the unspoken truth of what is happening with young people. And quite honestly, both parties completely miss this. Completely miss this. Donald Trump gets it better than Joe Biden. Is that what is our window that we're looking through? Nothing but wars overseas. A financial crisis that all of you remember your parents suffered through in 2008. One way or the other. Unless your father works for Goldman Sachs. If so, welcome, I guess. Please fly me home. All of us saw our parents struggle through that. Politicians in both parties that lied. A national debt that went from $3 trillion to $26 trillion. Jobs that go overseas. Alcoholism, depression, suicide, all increased dramatically. And then all of a sudden we see from a prison that certain people are getting phenomenally richer. And some of those people really deserve it. They have great ideas. Congratulations. But it's getting harder and harder for normal working young people to get ahead, to own a home, to get out of medical debt, to have a family, to get married, to be able to pursue that American way of life. I don't like that term American dream. It's overused. I like the American way of life. The American way of life is really simple. That my life is going to be better than my parents' life. And if it's not, it's on me. That's simple. That's the American way of life. Right? That if my life is not better than my parents' life, I did something to screw it up. That's that simple, right? However, now that's not always the case. Now it's like, I did everything I was supposed to do. I went to college. I got the piece of paper. I went into debt. I learned North African lesbian poetry. I did everything I was supposed to do. I learned that there's 97 genders. I learned that the orange man is bad. I learned everything. And I can't find a job. Well, it's because you were lied to. And you were lied to by the college cartel as well. And some of you, I hope, study things that are very meaningful. Congratulations. Some of you will probably have the grit to be able to persevere. But a lot of your friends are going to be perpetually in debt, trying to pay off a meaningless worth of piece of paper. Because they learned postmodern deconstructive critical race theory. Like, congratulations, you got How to Hate America 101 for $95,000. Great. How is that going to help you live the American way of life? And not only that, everything has gotten more expensive. Healthcare, transportation, housing. And all of this kind of comes together, and then we do the one thing we absolutely should never have done. We said to every young person, you're not allowed to work, you're not allowed to talk, you're not allowed to socialize, stay at home at all costs, or else you're going to die. And you're like, well, I actually look at the data, and there's a better chance that I literally die driving at home, driving on a highway, which is true, than from the Chinese coronavirus. They said, shut up, citizen, we're the experts. Like, no, actually, I understand math. You don't have a monopoly on math. It's 99.97% survival rate of the people that we know that are infected. And it's even way better than that, because not everyone who gets it gets tested and registered into the database. Those are just the people that we know of. And like, shut up, citizen, just keep ordering Amazon, order some weed, and, you know, wait till the lockdown will be over. Next thing you know, it's October, and our entire generation is more in debt, less trustful of the system, and ripe for a revolution. And this is the dangerous part. And then we can get to some questions, which is Donald Trump must absolutely win 4 more years. We all know that, because Biden represents the corporate class and all these sorts of things and the perpetual war, but the war system. But it's deeper than that. And all of you know this, is that if we lose and you're not able to get some back to some form of an open economy and a market system and freedom of speech, then some demagogue socialist that is far more talented and far more energetic than Joe Biden is going to come onto the scene and really start to exploit your and your friend's suffering. It's going to be Bernie Sanders 2.0, who's 37 years old, much better looking, much more energy, and then all of a sudden America will become an unrecognizably radical place. So the question is, what are we doing for a 28-year-old right now, a 24-year-old right now, so that in 8 years, they'll actually have faith in the system and not want to throw the table up and say, screw it, bring in the Bolsheviks. That's the threat that is bigger than even Joe Biden. And the only way you can prevent that, and I've learned this, the only way you can deal with these people is by winning. It's the only way. You absolutely must get more votes than them. It's that simple. It is the only metric of success that these people recognize or realize. You understand that they measure everything in terms of power. Conservatives measure things in terms of ideas. For example, a successful evening for a lot of us would be, I persuaded one person from being thinking of left-wing ideas to free market or to free enterprise or to free speech ideas or the Constitution. Win. The left will say, I turned one person from not having to seek me for power to another person that has to seek me for power. They view everything in terms of power dynamics. Only way that you can actually stifle what is coming next is by re-electing President Donald Trump. And by the way, I could go through all of the incredible success stories. The Israel UAE peace deal, as I mentioned, the First Step Back, VA Accountability Act. We're finally energy independent. The peace deals, not just in the Middle East, but with Serbia and Kosovo. The Right to Try Act. I mean, it goes on. And again, a lot of that, many of you know, some of you don't. And some of you are like, I don't like his style. I don't like all this. I'm like, fine. What you're saying then is you're prioritizing someone's blunt style of 74 years of a street fighter in Queens, not any of the policy or the substance, and you'd rather have some dementia-filled candidate with a California communist take over the White House. Maybe your priorities are a little twisted. And so I hate to be this blunt, and then we can do some questions. I hate to be this blunt, but my goodness, please suck it up. I'm not asking you to bring him into your family, okay? I'm asking you to hire him as your bodyguard for what you love. And that's why I called him the bodyguard of Western civilization in my RNC speech. And I called him the bodyguard because when you hire a bodyguard, you don't care about his tweet history. You don't. You don't care if he's going to start lashing out at the other person in debates, like whatever. You care about one thing. I hire him to protect me and what I love, and I want him to win. I want him to be very good at fighting. And the one thing that you can see the contrast in this very state and across the country, we have thousands of people streaming live, is the absolute difference between the corporate class Republicans and this new age Republican. Do you want a party that actually wants what's best for middle-income people and for young people that are trying to get ahead? Or what's best for the billionaire class in this country? Do you want these wars ended? I absolutely do. Are you kidding me? Do you want immigration policies that are going to work for engineering graduates? Anyone studying engineering? Anyone? A couple people? You guys are going to, we're all be working for you one day. You guys should want those crazy H-1B visas to be completely reformed so that we're not bringing people from overseas to try to take your jobs away. Those are all things that should be prioritized. And so you tie all this together. I say it's time for our generation to start to take responsibility for our country. And this is one thing that Cortez gets right and wrong. AOC, who's completely clueless. And we know that, okay? But Cortez is pretty good at getting young people to feel like we have to start taking responsibility for our country. And we know what she represents. I mean, I talk about it every day. You guys know this. Why socialism is awfully immoral and evil. We could talk about it if anyone wants to. But this is kind of just simple. It's a lot deeper than that. It's now you have to fasten your ballot and you have to say, I want to live in a country where first principles are recognized. I want to live in a country where wages are going to be rising, where people are judged on the character, not skin color, that protect the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. And I hate to put it this way, but America's actually on the ballot. I hate it. I wish it wasn't. I wish that these Democrats were, you know, wonderful pro-American, you know, candidates. They're just not. We all know this. Instead, now the idea and the nation of our country is now being put as a referendum issue. Are we a systemically racist country? Hell no, we are not a systemically racist country. And so that and so much more is the choice ahead of us coming in 4 more weeks for 4 more years.
I want to tell you guys about Vincero. Mr. Producer is wearing his Vincero watch. Our whole team wears their Vincero watches, and they're phenomenal. They have the most incredible looking watches at such an incredible price point. For a lot of brands, it's about the bottom line, not the customer. Vincero is different. These guys know just how important it is to look and feel your best. But above all, they treat their customers right, and they always go above and beyond to make sure you're taken care of. That's why they have 20,000 five-star reviews, because you won't find a better made watch than Vincero. Take advantage of 15% off everything at VinceroWatches.com/Kirk. VinceroWatches.com/Kirk.
Kirk. If you visit VinceroWatches.com/Kirk, when you purchase the discount Kirk, it's automatically applied at checkout. It's that easy to shop at Vincero. Like I said, timepieces you will enjoy and wear every single day. It's VinceroWatches.com/Kirk. VinceroWatches.com/Kirk. Our team loves Vincero Watches. VinceroWatches.com/Kirk.
So you started off talking about the First Amendment and how it's like beautiful and everything. Yeah. And so what my question is, how do you like defend the Constitution when there's constantly liberals calling it racist and bashing it?
It's a great question. The Constitution is the greatest political document ever written in the history of the world, period. So let's get to some facts about the U.S. Constitution. They say America is systemically racist, founded on slavery. Wrong. Lie. America was founded on freedom. In the U.S. Constitution, of which many of your friends have never read, there's a import slave ban in the U.S. Constitution. Go look at it yourself. In the original draft, as ratified in the Constitutional Convention, Thomas Jefferson, the architect of the Declaration, himself owned slaves. He had plenty of problems, no doubt, but he was also a virtuous man. He was much more nuanced than saying, slave owner, cancel him. Like, no, he actually founded the country we live in. Maybe he had a little bit of gratitude. And all of a sudden, Thomas Jefferson was left with a choice, being America's third president. In 1807, the 20-year ban all of a sudden came up. It was an opportunity for the first time, besides Britain, a country could say no new slaves into our country, effectively abolishing the slave trade. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves himself. What did he do? He signed it enthusiastically, calling slavery a moral sin. Now, mind you, he still owns slaves himself. I can't square that. I can't recognize that. We call that hypocrisy. We also call that humanity, because humans are inherently contradictory. Judge them on what they did for the nation, not just on the personal sins that they had. I'm not trying to justify that. But the U.S. Constitution is always founded on freedom. And those three words, we the people. Who's the sovereign in our country? Is it a king, a dictator, a despot, a billionaire, a ruling class member? Of course not. It's you. And the one thing that the Democrats and the left do not control is you. Think about it. They control your colleges. They control the media companies where you consume all your information. They control your social media companies. They control the megaton corporations. They control the celebrities and influencers. They control Hollywood. They control athletics. By the way, professional sports is just completely imploding. Go woke, go broke. And so they control all of it. But the one thing that bothers them, that they can't control, is you. That's why they call you deplorable in private moments. That's why at every opportunity they have, they say a snide mark about Donald Trump's horrible supporters. No, they hate you because they can't control you. And so the U.S. Constitution recognized natural rights. So I love discussing with people the U.S. Constitution have no understanding of the document, never understood it, don't understand how many articles there are, don't know Article 1, 2, 3, 6, or 7. They have no idea what's going on. Instead, they just say it's racist because the people who wrote it were racist. Well, first of all, we know categorically it's much more complex and nuanced than that. We already talked about Thomas Jefferson and stopping new slaves into the country in the U.S. Constitution. But more than that, here's the question. Has the preamble to the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, has it been changed since its original ratification? No. It is the longest lasting, most applicable document then as it is today. Why? Because human beings are equally as screwed up then as we are now. We like to think we've made all this progress. No, we're still sinful. We're still broken. We're still self-interested. But the one thing that the document recognizes more than anything else is that human beings are awful. And probably the worst thing you can do is give awful human beings a lot of control over an awful government. That's why the Constitution does not tell you what you should do or what you can do. It starts by saying what the government cannot do. The government cannot take your guns away. The government cannot shut you up. The government cannot go spy in your dorm room without a warrant. The government cannot accuse you of something without a speedy trial. The government cannot quarter soldiers in your piece of residence. And anything that is not detailed is left to who in the 10th Amendment? The states and the people. The U.S. Constitution was that first document, the multi-thousand year leap forward, where all of a sudden governments started having rules for the road for themselves, not for the subjects or the people. The idea that anyone would have ingratitude around this document means that that person probably went to college, and you should reject it completely and categorically. Thank you.
With With the vice presidential debate tomorrow, I'm wondering what should be Vice President Pence's strategy? How is it going to differ from the presidential debates? And how is President Trump going to change what he did in order to take more advantage of the next debate next week?
So thank you. It's a great question. And by the way, if there's any people in the opposition, you're more than welcome to, you know, hop, skip, and jump to the front. Pence should do 10 things. I did a whole podcast on this, and I came somewhat prepared. I'm going to go as quickly as I possibly can. I already sent the memo to him. Pray to God that he'll do this. Senator Kamala Harris is one of the most flawed politicians ever to run for the vice presidency. She's unlikable. She's terrible. But she's even more so than you might realize. And so there's 10 things that Vice President Pence must commit to memory. Okay, these are the 10 commandments of how to win the debate and how to win the presidency with it. Because I actually think tomorrow is a very, very important moment. People say, oh, the Trump White House is in free fall. Okay, if you believe that, then tomorrow is important. I don't necessarily believe it. I believe it for a different reason. Because who knows how long Joe Biden's got left? And you actually might be electing a co-president, not a real president. 10 things. Did you know that Senator Kamala Harris promoted a link during the Minneapolis race riots, bailing out and materially bailing out the rioters, the criminals, and the protesters through the Minnesota Freedom Fund? Oh, sorry, actually a rapist got bailed out by the Minnesota Freedom Fund through her direct donations alongside 13 other Joe Biden staffers. Question number one, Mike Pence has to turn to Senator Harris and say, Senator Harris, why did you promote a link to bail out the rioters that burned down black-owned businesses in Minnesota? Do black businesses not matter? Like, I'd love to see your answer to that, of course, right? That's number one. He must lead with that. And he must be specific. He must say, you tweeted it on June 1st, Minnesota Freedom Fund, because they always will try to lie. This is a good lesson for all of you. The more specific you go, the less wiggle room you give for people that bathe in dishonesty. You have to say dates. You have to say specifics. You have to say organizations. Number two, she's the most liberal senator in the entire United States Senate. Not my categorization. That's according to YouGov Track Insider. You can go to the website. They track every single senator. More liberal than Bernie Sanders. She is the most liberal, 100 out of 100, according to YouGov Track Insider. You guys can check it. Say, Senator Harris, you're the most liberal U.S. senator in all of the Senate, according to a nonpartisan analysis and survey. Why should people give you power over middle America when you're a California gun-grabbing senator? Every time Mike Pence ends a statement, he must ask one of these questions to Senator Harris. Because whomever the debate moderator is, and I really don't know, it's going to be some apparatchik corporate-funded left-wing hack that's going to try to destroy Mike Pence and not actually ask these questions. Mike Pence has to insert himself into the questioner. Number three, Senator Harris, you are the sitting U.S. Senator of California. Do you support SB 145? SB 145 is the decriminalization and normalization of pedophilia in California, just signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom, that deregisters pedophiles, allows judges the opportunity, excuse me, let me be specific, judges the opportunity to deregister pedophiles from the sex registry. So just understand, there's only so much time to do laws in state capitals. Who exactly is the pedophile lobby and why is California pandering to them? I'm sorry, if you are accused and convicted and tried of a crime by a jury of your peers of pedophilia, you should be in prison the rest of your life, not be taken off some sort of crime registry. And so even beyond that, Senator Mike Pence should say, do you denounce the fact that your governor and your best friend, Gavin Newsom, whom you knew very well in San Francisco when he was mayor of San Francisco, signed into law the favored piece of legislation from the pedophile lobby? Does that bother you? What do you think about that? Are you worried that Netflix actually has cuties on it? What do you think the fact that Netflix was indicted by a Texas grand jury today, locally, for advancing child porn? What do you think about that, Kamala Harris? All this is happening in California. That's number three. Number four. Mike Pence must go to Senator Harris and say, there's a little uncertainty here, Senator Harris. Joe, your running mate, Joe Biden, did not answer this in the last debate. Do you support packing the courts? Do you support moving the courts from 9 to 11 to 13? We need an answer. Yes or no? Pack the courts, yes. Pack the courts, no. No, there's no in between. Yes or no. And what Mike Pence has to do is he has to give his time up and say, time is valuable in debates, but this question and this answer is more valuable. Senator Harris, I'm going to give you all the time after this. Do you support packing the courts?
And he has to cross his hands like this.
That's simple. The American people will see transparently through who she really is. And she can't honestly answer because she will pack the courts. And then say, Senator Harris, Who would you put on the court for a vacancy? They've released no list, no names whatsoever. Of course, the activist media is not going to do this work. They will not. It is more than imperative that Mike Pence steps up and starts to ask these questions. Number five, Senator Harris, she's going to race bait. We know that, right? So as soon as she starts race baiting, you're racist, Charlottesville, in the streets, whatever, these stupid things that they talk about that are completely untrue, despite the founder and the head of Charlottesville, endorsing Joe Biden, by the way. Richard Spencer, he endorsed Joe Biden, but the activist media wouldn't tell you that. David Duke is endorsing Democrats. They don't even say that. Senator Harris, since you're race baiting, do you think that Joe Biden is still a racist? And if not, why'd you change your mind when you said that little girl was me when he opposed busing measures in San Francisco? Senator Harris, why did you say that? Do you think it's wrong that Joe Biden says that if you don't vote for him, you're not a black person? Does that bother you? Do you think that it's a problem that Joe Biden called black people super predators? Do you think it's a problem that Joe Biden said the first time he saw a clean-cut black man was when he met Barack Obama? Do you think it's a problem that he said you can't walk into a 7-Eleven without a slight Indian accent? Do you think it's a problem that he said that the urban cities are urban jungles filled with animals? What exactly did he mean by that? Is that a problem? Do you think Joe Biden's a racist because you used to think that? Did you change it because you really changed your mind, which you know is not true, or because you want power and that's all you've ever wanted? Number six, very simple question. Number six, is church essential? That simple. Say, Senator Harris, why is it? Senator Harris, why is it that pastors are under threat of arrest in your home state, the state you used to run as attorney general, with all your friends in the AG office? Pastors are being threatened with arrest, but abortion factories remain open, weed distributors remain open, liquor stores are open, and you can march in the streets, no social distancing, as long as you have a sign that says BLM. The virus will never touch you. It is the wokest virus in the history of epidemiology. Why is it, Senator Harris? Why is it, Senator Harris, that you won't say that church is essential? Why do you think that cannabis dispensaries are essential, but church is not? Number seven, the Green New Deal. They try to do a little tap dance about that. They try to dodge it. She's the co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. She introduced the piece of legislation into the U.S. Senate. She'll say, oh, I think it's a nice framework to work, whatever. It's a nice framework to work from. No. Framework, you're the sponsor. The $100 trillion Green New Deal that would abolish fossil fuels in our country, oil and natural gas, criminalize coal. Why would you co-sponsor it, Kamala Harris? And why can't we get a straight answer from you? Number eight, do you think that owning a firearm is a constitutionally guaranteed right? And if no, what weapons would you take away and how would you take them away? That's a very simple question. She does not believe owning a firearm is a right. She'll dance around and say, no. What guns would you take away? Look to the camera. She'll say, I won't take away any guns. Then why did you say you would in the primary? She said the AR-15s have all got to go. We'll send people knocking on doors. We'll put Robert Francis O'Rourke, the fake Hispanic Irishman from El Paso, in front of our gun registry. Why did you say that, Senator Harris? And why would you want to take away women's right to defend themselves against what's happening in the streets of our country? Why do you believe that? Number nine, as soon as Kamala Harris brings up women's rights and health care and abortion, Mike Pence will be attacked on this because he's very pro-life and he deserves credit for that. He must turn to Senator Harris and say, I got one question for you. When does life begin? When does life begin, Senator Harris? Total silence. This is the one question that abortion activists cannot answer. They can't. They all have different answers. Call me old school. I actually think it's probably one of the most important questions that we as human beings can answer, which is when life begins, which is, of course, when the sperm meets the egg and that incredible moment happens when a new life is formed. That is when life begins. She will not be able to answer that. And instead, Mike Pence must say, you have right here someone running for the highest office in the greatest country ever to exist that cannot tell you when a human life starts. I can, she won't. That's a problem. You see, moderate voters will see through her very quickly because she actually has said so many things on either side of the issue. No matter what she says, she'll be lying, but we must expose her inability to answer basic questions. And number 10, on the race issue. She will keep on race baiting. She'll keep on race baiting. And you say, Senator Harris, you've said that we need reparations in our country. You're a big fan of reparations. You said you want to oversee the reparations board. Can you tell us specifically your family's financial obligations since your grandfather owned slaves in Jamaica? Exactly what, how much is your family going to contribute since you come from a slave-owning family? And what will you do to atone for your privilege? These 10 things is what Mike Pence must do to defeat Senator Harris. And the theme of these 10 things is Mike Pence must be the prosecutor in this debate. Senator Harris might have been a prosecutor in a former life. Mike Pence must put her on trial because this is an opportunity for everyone to see the radical agenda that they embody. Thank you for the question.
So given that most people who accept facts already vote for Trump, how do we help everyone else?
Yeah, that's a... It's good. I like you. Look, it's not an easy question. I mean, look, this is a great point that the left always values feelings and emotion. They say my truth. Look, there's no such thing as your truth, okay? And if you boil it down, and you can always ask this, but this is kind of a deeper thing. Do you believe in Newtonian physics? Like, it's that simple. Do you believe that force equals mass times acceleration? Do you believe that an object at rest will stay at rest? And do you believe that there's an equal and opposite reaction for every single action? Those three things, no matter if you're black, white, Hispanic, man, woman, transgender, Catholic, Mormon, Christian, or Muslim, or Jew, those things are equally applicable to every person on the planet. So it doesn't matter if you have your own truth. That's why we as conservatives value facts over certain personal narratives. We don't understand what it's like to be me. Like, yeah, to live in the greatest country ever and have every opportunity in front of you, and you literally have created an industry to complain all the time. You're right, I don't. Like, actually, I do not know what it's like to complain for a living. I don't know what that's like. Colin Kaepernick. Like, I don't know what that's like. He has turned a cottage industry into complaining. He failed miserably as a professional athlete. He failed miserably in athletics. And now he's a multimillionaire talking about how awful our country is. And we all know how good we have it here. We could talk about the stories from socialist war-torn countries. We could talk about everything. But basically, how can you do it? I wish I had a magic trick. But ask questions and stay rooted in facts, not personal narratives or emotions. It's a very dangerous, journey to be on. Thank you for your question. I appreciate it. Hello.
So you and I both know that Marxism is truly the deadliest disease of all time. But regardless, this ideology is gaining a lot of momentum in this country. So my question to you is, in your mind, what are the main underlying causes of the rise of Marxism, especially in the universities?
It's a great question. And I think that I have a different answer than most conservatives. Marxism is really attractive when you don't own anything. And this is a very interesting thing that conservatives, again, I think the corporate class gets this wrong. They say, oh, it's only because we didn't teach our history correctly. Trust me, I'm all over that one, right? Like, I do two podcasts a day, now national radio show. I got it. Like, I'm all over that. But there's another part to this where if you're 29 years old or even 22 years old and you're negative $70,000 in debt, someone's telling you that you should be the victim all the time. You're unable to find meaningful work. You don't marry because you've been instructed not to marry. All of a sudden, these very radical ideas that promise utopia, but there's only one thing that you have to do to the utopia. Kill 90% of the people and burn everything to the ground, right? So that's kind of the thing you have to do. Like, okay, I'll do that because that's how angry I am. And so we as conservatives have to understand and recognize, I touched on this a little bit in my opening remarks, that when a young person is 29 years old and they're working a minimum wage job, and they have $65,000 in student loan debt, and they're unmarried, and they're renting, not buying through a mortgage, or they don't own anything, all of a sudden we have to look at that. That's a perfect Marxist revolutionary. Perfect. Because all of a sudden they're going to say, all your problems are because of capitalism. Join us. It is grievance-based politics. So what we have to do is we have to recognize that there's actually been a sequence of public policy decisions that have made it harder for young people to succeed, not the least of which has been the lockdown. So I'm not calling for reparations or debt forgiveness, but I think that we should pay people to have children in our country if you stay loyally married to the same person. I think we should be unafraid of that. I think that if our citizens want to have children, that it should be easier to do that. Call me crazy. I actually think it's a good thing to make it easier for mothers to stay at home and raise those children. They call it paid family leave or whatever. I don't care what you call it. And your good senator, Mike Lee, has been on the right side of this issue. He really has. Because I think that we have to, as conservatives, make it easier to live a conservative life. Right? I think we as conservatives have to lean in on church is essential, that freedom of speech is also all these sorts of things. But more than that, there's a material pressure right now on young people. And if we don't get this right through a sequence of public policy choices and decisions, and we just say, oh, just let it all sort itself out. You know this, and I know this. You see what's coming next with your peers in college. And it's radical, and it's angry, and it's determined, and it's nasty. And you guys are in Utah. You go to other states, it's more organized and more vengeful. So we have to get people to believe in the American way of life, where that I'm not going to believe in Marxism because I have a job, I have three kids, I have a mortgage. These ideas are nothing to me. All of a sudden, it's kind of like, I don't have time for this. Like, I have something more important. But when you're single, 33, no job, no mortgage, you got a lot of revolutionary time on your hands. A lot, right? And then you shut down the country on top of it. It's a perfect revolutionary. And they're going to do something in our country that none of us will want to see. And it will be radical. And it will be bitter. And so we have to make sure that our system can pass a stress test of a Marxist revolution. Because these things will happen gradually, then suddenly. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, what we really have to do is reinstill our values. I totally agree with that. But values are just ideas when you're $90,000 in debt and you're working at Starbucks and you read the news every day about how awful everything is. All of a sudden, those Marxist ideas you learned, you're going to say, I'm going to put these into action. And every country that has fallen to a Marxist revolution is because they didn't take the complaints of the middle class seriously. That's why they fell. And Donald Trump should be a fire alarm wake-up call that the middle class is having a tough time in this country, everybody. And the corporate class, your other senator, doesn't get that. Because for him, he worked for Bain Capital, shipping those jobs overseas. And fine, I'm glad he made some money, whatever. Fine. But middle-income people are hurting right now, big time. And it will be either Republican Party that says, hey, we're going to make it easier to have children, stay loyally married, we want robust local communities, we're going to bring jobs. Or it's going to be the Democrats that say, everything's the problem. Join us in our arson. We have to choose wisely. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Charlie, my name is James Sullivan. I've been waiting a long time to meet you. I don't know if you remember your tweet on August 28th where you said...
Did I get in trouble with this one?
No, you didn't, sir. Black Lives Matter Incorporated threatening to rip the president out of the White House. You recall that?
Did I tweet that?
Charlie Kirk, yes, it's on
you. What did I say? What did you say?
You said Black Lives Matter Incorporated threatening to rip the president out of the White House.
Threatening to rip the president out of the White
House.
Yes. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Do you remember this video?
Oh, is it you in the video?
No.
Oh.
This is my brother.
Oh, okay.
What's going on, everybody? My name's John Sullivan. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah.
I do remember this video. Yes.
USA.
Yeah, this is my brother, John.
Well, give it up for you guys. Thank you. That's great. Thank you.
So I just had a question for you.
No, that's fine. I was just trying to, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually not like my brother. I didn't, you know, organize a protest where there's a shooting in Provo or do any of that. But I just had a question for you. How do you think or why do you think Black Lives Matter Utah has been able to not only, destroy their own cities, but branch out into other cities and turn very conservative people like my brother radical leftists? And it's happened to several people in my life, but my brother's been a huge part of it since he was raised in a very conservative family.
And so I don't know if your brother is black or white or, but yeah, he's black, and that's fine. It's just the answer is going to be different than that. The number one reason is white guilt. That's the number one reason, is that white people have been taught to feel guilty for something they never did. They never knew anyone that did, just because of their mere existence. And now they're on some sort of virtue signaling. I want to feel good atonement tour. And this is wrong. It's destructive. It's suicidal, actually. And so I want to be very clear. If there's a racist in this room, then please go atone for your sin. It's evil what you did. But if there's white people in this room, which there are plenty of, and you're not a racist, you have nothing to apologize for. You don't. It's that simple. And so that one of the major reasons why this is caught on like wildfire, first of all, it's the suburban lifestyle. These people have been so freaking bored the last 6 months, seriously, is that they've been looking for the thing to make myself feel good. Like, oh, I'm going to go, this is our version's Martin Luther King Jr. of civil rights. Like, you're really doing the exact opposite that he told you to do. It's also misinformation. It's social media propaganda, disinformation, the corporate funding of all of it. But the number one underlying reason is of white guilt. It's 100% is that white people are instructed or pressured by other people in their community to feel bad for the system of whiteness that is created around you. And look, we know this system is not like benefiting just a single skin color. Why is it that Taiwanese, Vietnamese, and Southeast Asians do so well in our country, better than white people? In fact, why do Nigerian immigrants who are black do better than the average white person in this country? If we are systemically racist, why do Nigerians do so well in America? Oh, that's right, because they stay loyally married, they focus on the family, they graduate from high school, and they work really hard. Those are colorblind virtues, by the way. And so one of the major reasons this has caught on fire is you have venomous left-wing activists that are very well-funded with a statement that no one dares disagree with because you don't want to be called the R word, right? It's the worst thing you could possibly call on the planet. And for good reason, I mean, no one wants to be called that. It's evil. It's a sin, right? And I'm not defending it, nor am I qualifying it, but it's that you say that word, it's like you can make people scatter. Like, it's not me. No, don't call me that. Please stop. And all of a sudden, all dialogue ends at that point. And if you understand critical race theory, I could go through what it is, where it comes from, Herbert Marcuse, Frankfurt School. There's three attributes, though, of the 10 of critical race theory that I'll focus on really quick. It's totalitarian in nature. What does that mean? It's not enough that you're just existing. They say white silence is violence. You must post the black square or you're a bad person. That they judge you by not doing something. They judge you by whether or not you've complied to their totalitarian edict. And that's very, very troubling and scary. So most, you know, a lot of decent people are like, of course I'll do this. I don't want to be called these bad names. I'll do it. What else do I have to do? I have to give you my home. I have to give you, I mean, at some point, where is what? We don't know. Second thing is this, is that they do not believe in dialogue or discussion. They don't. It is against postmodern thinking and critical thinking, critical race theory, to believe in free speech. That's why I said the free speech issue in our country is the number one issue in our country. We are speaking beings. Aristotle said we are talking beings. You can govern people in two ways. You can govern them by persuasion, talking and speaking, or govern them by force. Which way does BLM Incorporated want us to be governed? By force. We will burn down your business if you don't listen to us. We will chase you through the streets. We will hurt your family. That's their edict. For us, we're kind of like, well, let's just have an argument. Let's have a discussion. Can we talk? No, you're evil, racist. Okay, sorry. And it shuts people up, right? All of a sudden, we're not talking anymore because everyone gets called these awful names without evidence, instantaneously, just because of the color of your skin a lot of the time. And the third thing of critical race theory that they do very, very well is that they truly believe that melanin matters. And let me be very clear. I kind of think your skin color is irrelevant. I think that's actually the progressive thing to believe in. I actually think that the fact that you're black and I'm white is really kind of a silly thing to focus on. I care if you're a good person. I care about your worldview. I care about your faith. I care about your spirituality. And I think that if you focus on people's skin color, they will turn themselves into tribal groups. And all of a sudden, you will not like what happens next. And it will happen quicker than any of us could possibly imagine. That's exactly what BLM Incorporated wants. Hope that helps answer the question. Thank you. Just really quick, because I got a whole line.
Why don't black conservative lives matter to Black Lives Matter?
Like, because they don't consider you to be black. They think your blackness is tied to your ideology, and Joe Biden said that. They think blackness is tied to leftism. When Joe Biden says you're not black if you don't vote for me, they absolutely mean that. That's why they come after people like you, Candace Owens, Thomas Sowell, Clarence Thomas, Brandon Tatum, Rob Smith, Terrence Williams so aggressively, Burgess Owens, who's terrific, and all these people because they think blackness and leftism is inseparably linked. This is no different than what the KKK believed, where they thought white skin color and Christianity were inseparably linked. We don't believe that. The left is the most racist movement currently out there right now. You can't find a more racist ideology to believe in. You can't. So, again, I want to reinforce, I care about who you are, not what you look like. These used to be universally agreed upon values. Now all of a sudden they call you a racist for believing that. It's a white supremacist structure with no evidence, no data whatsoever, just because they feel that way. I'm telling you all right now, if we don't stop this, BLM wants a race war in this country. They do. BLM wants it. They're trying to provoke it. We have to stand on the shoulders of free expression and on character judgment, not on skin color judgment. Thank you. Next question.
Okay, so 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And in order for me to live my life, I have to take chemotherapy every day for the rest of my life. And oncologists in this country are the only doctors that get a direct cut of the medicine that they prescribe. I know that President Trump did a lot to help lower the costs of insulin and penicillin and other pharmaceuticals in his office so far. How likely is it that he will be able to help lower the cost of chemotherapy and other drugs as well in his next 4 years and 3 months and 3 days in office?
Well, first of all, thank you for being here and God bless you. It's an incredible story. Thank you. Secondly, that you bring up a great point, which is the president has challenged the drug companies and challenged the hospital lobbies in a very consequential way. I can't speak to your specific example, but I can tell you that he has signed a series of executive orders going directly after the drug company's dominance and price gouging. And look, one of the things that he signed that is not directly applicable to you, but I think will be helpful and give you some comfort in how the president is fighting atypically on these issues, is he's fought for something called price transparency at hospitals. And this is something that is so incredibly simple and easy. And by the way, make sure you pressure your senators on this and your congresspeople. It's so simple. If anyone's been to a hospital before, you understand how screwed up this system is. Every single thing they offer you should be given to you as if you're going to Denny's on a menu. So instead of the grand slam, it should be, oh, triple bypass is $38,000 and my insurance won't cover it. Instead of you go through the whole process and they put you in that ridiculous corner office of billing, they're like, we'll send you a bill. You're like, okay, you kind of forget about it. 4, 5, 6 weeks later, you get a bill. Oh, sorry, insurance won't cover it. Oh, wow, I owe $19,000. Prices are fundamental to a market. It's how we communicate with each other. And right now, the hospital lobby, which is major nonprofits and major corporations in bed with each other. Again, this is part of disrupting that corporate landscape that I talked about. And it's not socialized medicine. It is market-based medicine using prices. If we had publicly available prices with everything that was administered to us, drugs, for example, in hospitals, prices would go down dramatically, almost instantaneously, because then you'd start asking questions. So why does this cost so much? What is this? I don't understand. The president signed that executive order and he immediately got sued by the hospital lobby, calling it illegal and unconstitutional. And so I can't speak to your example specifically, but I know that he is challenging the drug companies, trying to put forth what is called favored nation clause, which means that if it's made in America and it's an American drug manufacturer, that they should get preference over other countries. There's more nuance to that, but my opinion is this, and I'm just talking generally to pharmaceutical companies. I think that Republicans that have made an unholy alliance with these pharmaceutical companies have made a deal with the devil. I think these pharmaceutical companies have gouged middle-class families for far too long. They've made it too expensive for people like you every single day. Yes, they have great innovations, but when they domicile their manufacturing overseas in China, then just sell it back at 100 times multiple back to families that have to go into debt just to survive, I think that's immoral. I really do. So I want disruption and a challenging of the pharmaceutical industry in our country. Thank you so much.
All right, so I'm half Guatemalan. My mom, thank you. My mom's side of the family are all immigrants, legal immigrants, right? And basically, one of the biggest things that they bring up for voting for Donald Trump, because I keep trying to engage them to get them to vote for him, one of the biggest things they fall back to is he hates immigrants, right? And they've heard the, correct me if I'm wrong, MS-13. They've heard, you know,
he literally married an immigrant.
I know. And I say, yeah. And I say that too. He literally is married to an immigrant. You know, go back to your country statements and things like that. So I get all that. But my question is more, what has he done? I'm not familiar very much with his actual policies or actions that he's taken to support immigration.
Yeah. So it's a good question. And so, let's just go through some facts with immigration every single year. We administer about 1.2 million green cards every single year, which I think is way too much, just so we're clear. I think it's way too much. I think it brings down wages. I think that it also brings down capacity for recent workers and graduates to be able to find meaningful work in the tech sector. But that's just the way it's been. Okay. President Donald Trump really didn't disrupt it that much till recently, where he signed an immigration moratorium. I'm not telling you anything that's going to be helpful in winning over your family members, but I will in a second, which is to stop all new immigration into the country, which I completely support, by the way. When you have 20 million Americans out of work, you shouldn't keep on bringing in more people from around the world. Well, I will say this, though, that the president has been unafraid to challenge the current immigration policies. And I completely support him in this. To say that he's anti-immigrant, though, I guess the question is, what kind of immigrant? The president says, I want people that speak the language, that are willing to work, that bring a sort of skill, that are also not coming in chain migration or some other way with that. I think that's a very good thing. And here's why. I think that if you have an unsustainable amount of immigration into a country, then you risk economic stability and also cultural stability. You really do. Ask any country that has been wealthy. Look at any country that is not able to control its immigration. With that being said, the president has, despite all of his detractors and all of this criticism, he still has been able to have an incredible, prior to the lockdown, a robust economy for immigrants in this country. And I also think he gets widely misrepresented. He talked first and foremost about illegal immigration, and then he introduced something called the RAISE Act. The RAISE Act is saying, hey, why don't we just have 400,000 people of visas into this country every single year, but let's make sure they're qualified into this country. I agree with that. And so I don't know how to win over your family members with that, because there is, in my opinion, an incredible amount of external cost with the current immigration kind of system that we have. This idea, though, that he hates immigrants, I think that is completely unfair. Here's why. Your family members should want less immigrants into this country. They should, if they want their wages to stay stable. They're here. They shouldn't want another million green cards to be administered. They should want their jobs to be secure, or else somebody else is going to cut their wage in 10 years, is going to cut the stability of their work, or is going to redomicile their job. And so since they're in this country and they're able to vote, which I'm guessing they are, right, that they should also vote in their own self-interest. And this idea of just keeping the borders completely open endlessly, I think, as being continually disproven in one way or not. You have more people, and again, you might disagree with this, and that's fine. I think it's really bad. You have more people that speak Spanish than English in California. I think that's a bad thing. I do. If you do not have a country where you can't communicate with each other, all of a sudden you stop talking and you get into your own factional cultural groups. And so, again, I could go through kind of the semantical response to it, but I hope that's somewhat helpful in some way. So thank you. Appreciate it.
So my question, there might be a little bit to unpack, but you made some comments regarding foreign wars.
Yes.
And so I guess my underlying question before I give some context is, in your opinion, what should the United States' role be as the world police, for example? And in the past, I've seen videos of you saying that we should be proud, as am I, that we've always been willing to fight and die for other nations. The entire country of South Korea exists because of us. So in your opinion, as you stated before, and one thing that's been hard for me to swallow is Donald Trump's comments regarding the Iraq war and things like that. And obviously there's debate back and forth whether it's good or bad or not. But in your opinion, what should be the United States' role as a world police?
So I think that's a very good question. Thank you. First of all, I think that you always have to look at kind of the state of our own country when you make these decisions. And because the country is not always as strong as it always is. I think that's the first thing. So, for example, when we engaged in the Korean War, we were much wealthier and much more stable. And the Korean Peninsula was in dire need of American intervention. I think it was a good thing. I do. The question is, was Vietnam the same? I say absolutely not. I think it was a mistake. Now, what I've made, I don't know what I would have made because I wasn't even alive at that time. And I completely disagree with the Iraq War. I also think that in this current phase that we're in right now, I think that the only geopolitical threat that we should, that's fine. I think Iran is awful. I think we've got them on the ropes. But I think that we have to prioritize. Should we be the world's police? I don't like that term. I don't. I think that it's generally we've been a benevolent superpower and a force for good. But ending 20-year entanglements in the Kandahar Valley while China is taking over the world is probably a good thing. And so while I'm not a U.S. isolationist, I'm also not a neoconservative where I look for a country to invade every other month, right? Which there's an entire, we have a senator that believes in that, right? And so where they've never found a war that they don't support. I think that the number 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 10, 20 focus has to be on the Chinese Communist Party. So that I think that you have to always prioritize threats in every single capacity. So what does that look like? Well, that means that we probably should stop saber rattling in Eastern Europe and be like, okay, Russia's not our friend. Putin's a bad guy. But also, China's 100 times bigger threat to us than the Russian Federation. Like, it's not even close. China is now building a navy that is capable of encountering ours. They're building islands in the South China Sea. They are spying on our universities through Confucius Institutes. They're dumping products through steel and through manufacturing in our country. Still, they're stealing our intellectual property all across the board. Does that mean we go to war with China? No, I don't think that's what we should do. I do think we should probably find a sunset way to stop trading with them. Absolutely. We need to treat them like the Soviet Union. And we must make them pay for what they did with this virus. And so I think that your question really comes from an informed and good place, because in some ways, there's a nuance to my position on it, right? Where I'm very quick to praise our intervention in World War II and Korean War. I'm also quick to criticize the Iraq War. And I think that there's also is different motives. In the Korean War, it was a lot about, you know, the peninsula liberalization, and we handed it over to now the South Korean, you know, the Republic of South Korea. The Iraq War, I think, was an undeclared objective. And here's really the rule, I think, for engagement. If U.S. military force is going to be used, victory has to be very clear. We are really bad at perpetually occupying and trying to liberalize Islamic theocratic dictatorships. We're really good at killing people and breaking things. We're the best at it. And that's what the military should be about. If the objective is not about who we are going to kill and what we are going to break and get our loved ones out of harm's way, the military should not be used. It's that simple. Thank you.
Charlie, I really appreciate your answer about China. That's something that I've been really worried about throughout this past year, is that I feel like the U.S. is being distracted with some of the inner turmoil, with fake scandals, with, you know, corporations being bought out by China, as well as, like, as you've mentioned, like, they've bought out shipping ports throughout the world. They're doing an ethnic cleansing of the Uyghur Muslims. They're invading Hong Kong. There are active skirmishes between China and India. They've unleashed the coronavirus on us. They have the WHO in their back pocket. How is Donald Trump going to outmaneuver them if he wins the election?
It's a great question, and you're exactly right. This is a fun thought exercise. Just think to yourself tonight and tomorrow, what would you want to see happen if you were the Chinese Communist Party? What movements internally would you support? Would you support the Make America Great Again movement or the BLM Incorporated movement? Of course you'd support BLM Incorporated. They're burning the country down for you. They're doing their work for you, right? It's like, great, this is great. We got less buildings to burn if we ever have to do that. That's dividing the country based on skin color. That's an insurrectionist movement that is, of course, friendly with the Chinese Communist Party. And you're exactly right. The CCP is the biggest threat in many different ways to our country and our generation. So first of all, our corporations are basically bought and paid for. Adidas, Nike, the National Basketball Association, most of Hollywood, they care much more about maximizing their profit margins than ever holding the Chinese Communist Party accountable. And it's had a human cost. 210,000 Americans have died from the Chinese coronavirus because they lied about it. It was probably a bioweapon out of a laboratory. We'll find out soon. We don't know yet, but it definitely didn't come from a wet market. That's we know for sure. Whether it was released unintentionally and they lied about it, or this was released intentionally to try to destroy America's standing in the world, because for them, one death is a tragedy. A million is a statistic in the Chinese mind. They don't come at this from a Christian worldview. You have to understand human life for them is completely expendable. They do not view people as made in the image of God. They have an atheistic worldview where power is all they care about, and the obliteration of America is their top priority. And so, look, the Chinese Communist Party took a different tack than the Soviet Union. Instead of trying to declare outright war with us like the Soviet Union did through Cold War, they decided to purchase us. It was brilliant. The CCP 20 years ago went to every major corporation and started partnerships and started manufacturing deals and started paying professors, everything you could possibly imagine to get their teeth into our country. Now we wake up 20 years later and there is not a major bank, Hollywood firm, or tech company, Facebook is the only one that isn't, that is not bought and paid for by the Chinese Communist Party on their payroll in one way or the other. So how do we decouple that? Well, President Trump has a lot of tools at his disposal still. Number one, China must be immediately stripped of its developing nation label in the World Trade Organization. It's a very big deal. Number two, President Trump, if he gets reelected, this will tank the markets. he should put a 200% tariff on every single good that is non-essential from China, textiles and otherwise. And then let me finish. And then he should go after Chinese proxies around the world. Say if any country does not kick out Huawei or the Bank of China from their country in the next 6 months, you cannot do commerce with the U.S. We must saber rattle the U.S. dollar for the betterment of the free world. So to answer the previous question, you know, what is the right, you know, role of the U.S.? The right role of the U.S. in the world is to make sure that China crumbles sooner than later.
I heard rumors that China has been outmaneuvering our tariffs by basically doing the, like,
they go to Nicaragua, change the label, and send it in.
And then send to us, and we have to pay for the tariff.
You're exactly right. Yes. Okay. So we have to, if I know about it, and you know about it, and our trade department does it, there's something, I mean, the U.S. Commerce Department, which oversees trade, there's a problem with that. So, but look, the other part is this, is that President Trump should basically fire a warning shot and say, U.S. companies, you got 9 months, if he wins re-election, which God willing he will, fires a warning shot and says, you have 9 months to get out of China or else we're not going to do business with you. And he should make U.S. the drugstore of the world. He should say, by the way, if you want cheap labor, go to Laos or Cambodia or Vietnam, okay? If you're so obsessed with having $2 an hour labor of nine-year-olds that make your tennis shoes, right, which is what these corporations care about the most, they don't care about our country, then fine, go to Vietnam. They got plenty of nine-year-olds to go make the tennis shoes for you, right? I know, when you hear about it, like, oh, wow, that's actually pretty immoral. Yeah, it is what they've been doing. And we've grown addicted. We have so much plastic crap that we have imported from China that we have garage sales begging people to take our garbage away for us for a dollar a piece. We have even more garbage on top of that. There's a multi-billion dollar self-storage industry in our country, so we can sell the stuff that we can't give away, sell for a dollar. We just put it in a self-storage unit and never visit it. So the question is, are we abundantly wealthier because we've been trading with China? In some ways, yes. Most ways, no. Because we shipped away middle-class jobs, and what did we get in return? Trinkets that we don't use, clothes that we never wear, and piles of garbage that have no meaning or sentimental value, and empty factories and opioid clinics that are full. And that is where the president needs to be aggressive in his second term, and the 21st century will be determined on whether or not that we are aggressive against the malevolence of the Chinese Communist Party. Thank you.
Hi. Welcome to Provo.
Thank you.
All right, so standing in line, about 20 of my questions already been answered. So I'm going to ask
you. What's your 21st?
All right, so many of us here in the state of Utah, many of us have been abroad. And one of the questions I've been asked why I've been abroad is, what is the culture of the United States? And at the time, I didn't have a good answer. Now I want to emphasize what I believe is essential to the culture of the United States. One is the idea of a citizen, and two is being created in the image of God.
Yes.
And there are many other parts of being a part of the American culture. Now, I believe that the Chinese government, their main strategy in subverting us, Yuri Bezmenov talked a lot about the tactics of subversion.
Did a whole podcast on it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. How do we combat the subversion of both the idea of a citizen and citizenship, and also the idea of being created in the image of God?
It's a great question. Well, first of all, when we need to have a complete and total, I think, recalibration of what we value in our country. The fact that we allowed our churches to be closed, but the abortion clinics to be open, will go down as one of the most moral injustices, I think, of religious liberty of our time. I really do. And so There's a lot of people of different faith backgrounds. I'm implying you're LDS, but there's one thing we can all agree, that there's a spiritual problem happening in our country. And people will not view things in the image of God if they don't believe in God. And so I'm not trying to attack. If anyone's an atheist here tonight, thank you for being here. I'll pray for you. And so, no, I mean that, I will. And so I do think that we need to have a spiritual reawakening in this country. I really do. The second thing about a citizen is that it's a very important point. Americans seem to think that citizenship should be unlimited. I don't. I think that anything that is worthwhile must have limitations. That is one of the laws of nature. It's an uncomfortable truth, is that there is not unlimited things of which are rare and that are good. And when you start to dilute the citizenship pool, then all of a sudden it starts to mean less, and you're going to have very serious consequences, where all of a sudden you're going to be having people coming into the country that might not share that American way of life, that might not believe in those values or those ideas, which is what we've seen. That's not to say that every single person holds that view, but an alarming rate it is. And so those two things, I think, are really well said. I'll add a third. One thing that makes the American system different is this idea of intergenerational stratification. Very big, heady word. It basically means what I said earlier, that if you work hard and you do things the correct way and you don't totally screw up, your life will be better than your parents' life. That's kind of the American promise. And all three of those things, if I add my one under your two, are now under direct threat in our country. Very wise. Thank you for your question. I appreciate it.
All right, so I'm a huge Trump fan, and his 8 years are going to be fantastic.
There you go. So there you go.
But I'm kind of looking out to 2024, and I'm nervous because I don't see anybody that's going to continue the Trump train. I'm nervous that with 2024, we're going to go back to the Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan crap party that we had.
One of your senators that you have. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate that he's in charge of our state. But so my question is, what should President Trump do and what should the Republican Party do to make sure that we don't go back to the Jeb Bush spineless Republican in 2024?
Every person in this room needs to play an active role. First of all, we have to get the president reelected. We have to. And every person needs to do something about that. You guys need to help out Burgess Owens, by the way. It's very, very important. Everyone go knock on doors and make phone calls. Very, very important. It really is. Number two. If and when the president wins re-election, God willing, 4 more weeks to 4 more years, then all of you need to demand out of the people that start to bop their heads out, start to ask the same sort of questions that I've been posing tonight, if you agree with it. Say, hey, what's your stance on the fact that social media companies are dominating the entire zeitgeist? Do you think that's a good thing just because they're private companies? You know, all of a sudden, do you think that we should have unlimited amounts of people coming into our country? I think these questions need to be asked of the potential candidates early and often. That's why I wrote the MAGA doctrine, because we have a lot to learn from this Trump movement. I think it's a good thing the Republican Party is valuing people that shower before work and shower after work. I think it's a good thing that the president says you don't need to get a 4-year degree to succeed in this country. I think it's a good thing where the president says, hey, I want us to be the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. And screw you, UN. Screw you, NATO. Screw you, World Trade Organization. Screw you, Trans-Pacific Partnership. We're the greatest country ever. We're exceptional. We're not going to be part of your globalist schemes, whatever they might be. I think that's a good thing. And so I think that the president's movement is determined on you. What's the grassroots energy and enthusiasm that all of you are going to demand out of that next crop of candidates? And they will listen to you. They'll see what you put on social media. They'll see what you engage with. They'll see how you'll be able to do that. And so the answer lies in you. Thank you. Last question.
All right, let's make this good. So I'm just going to start with a quote by Thomas Sowell really quick. The key fallacy of so-called gun control laws is that such laws do not, in fact, control guns. They simply disarm law-abiding citizens while people bent on violence find firearms readily available. So my question as a libertarian is what Donald Trump claims to be pro Second Amendment, but has readily supported red flag laws and stuff like that. And so my personal belief is that every gun law is an infringement. And so what is Donald Trump going to be going with in the future?
Can I put your mind at ease a little bit? Because I think you're searching for that. Thank you for your question. I'm not libertarian in every issue. You've probably noticed that. On guns, I think that gun laws should be very much deregulated. I think that owning a firearm is very important. And I think that politicians should not get in the way of you being able to own a weapon. I'm really totally in agreement with you on that, just so we're clear, okay? And so I'm going to make one argument that I think you'll sympathize with. Just look at my shirt. Where are the most consequential gun laws going to be decided? You might disagree with Trump on red flag laws. I probably agree with that. You're right. But the next Heller decision is going to be decided by these folks, right? 5-4 decision, everybody. Heller. D.C. versus Heller, remember? No, it was D.C. versus Heller. It was, got up to the Supreme Court. 5-4 that could have stripped the idea that owning a firearm is a constitutional right. Kavanaugh wrote that that was the correct decision. He's now in the Supreme Court. Gorsuch agrees. Amy Coney Barrett agrees. So while you might disagree with the red flag laws, remember that was a heightened political moment. Probably it got a lot of pressure to do that. Understand the real meat of it is also going to happen in the Ninth Circuit, which is now all full, half and half of pro 2A guys and gals. So if you're looking at any constitutional issue you care about, I care about life. I care about spying and privacy. You probably do. You're a libertarian, right? Fourth Amendment stuff. This is what matters. And guess what? All three of these people will be on the court post-Trump. So if any of you have any qualms, I don't like a style, I don't like this, this is worth voting for right here. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Because those three people
have proven to protect individual constitutional rights. And so for any person out there that is a constitutional conservative, this is reason to go knock on doors and support candidates. And I agree with you that it is a constitutionally protected right and a natural right given by God to be able to defend yourself against a tyrant. And that is something that we must fight for at every single turn. So thank you so much for your question. Guys, I want to thank you so much for tonight. Please subscribe to the podcast. And one final thing. If we rise up, we knock on doors, we stay engaged for the next 30 days. I know it's been a crazy year. We can win, but I will not be able to live with myself. This is why I'm crisscrossing the country. This is why I'm doing these events everywhere. If I wake up and Joe Biden becomes president, it's in your hands. How many votes are you going to be responsible for in key battleground states? How many people are you going to be able to drive out to the polls? Burgess Owens and others here in Utah. It's your party. It's your country. It's our generation. It's time to rise up so we can get the president of the United States 4 more years. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
What a great episode. Thank you guys for listening. If you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, start a chapter, get engaged, chip in some money, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. If you're a young person listening to this, it is your duty to get involved with Turning Point USA, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. We are doing an Ask Me Anything Monday. Check out charliekirk.com for all the latest and breaking news. Stay engaged, stay informed, stay involved. Thank you guys for listening. Talk to you soon. God bless.